Hi, this is Craig Ballantyne, host of Early to Rise Radio. Have you ever wanted to become wealthier, healthier, wiser, or just have more time to appreciate the finer things in life? On this show, we reveal what high performers are doing every day to be more successful without sacrificing their personal lives. Early to Rise Radio is sponsored by the Perfect Day Formula. Get your free copy of this game-changing success guide at freeperfectdaybook.com. Now let's get started with today's show.
Live from the Bay Area. Podcasting around the world. You're listening to the Pedro Frias Radio Show. True freedom in business, finance, mindset, and your career. It's your wake-up call. The Pedro Frias Show starts now.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. I am pumped today to have somebody super special. This dude is a Wall Street Journal best-selling author of the book Unstoppable: How to Get Through Hell, Overcome Anxiety, and Dominate in Business and Life. He is also the author of The Perfect Week Formula, which is a badass book on how to structure your week so you can dominate, you can focus, and you can kind of zone in on what really matters. He is a top coach nationally. He's coached over 250 entrepreneurs from zero to $1 million in their business. He's coached over 260 millionaires, which if you know how tough that is, it's super impressive. There's a lot of coaches out there, but very few that have accomplished things like this. So I'm very honored to have him on the show. He lives in Mexico. I've been following him online. He has great content. Craig Ballantyne, welcome to the show.
This is going to be a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, brother. Obviously, you are super accomplished. You're an excellent coach, mentor. Your books have personally helped me in a number of different ways, mostly because of some of the things that are in there about even structuring your day, focusing on what's important, and also overcoming anxiety, because I know anxiety was one of the things that you, what kind of led you to author these books and help people.
Yeah, I mean, it got really bad for me back probably about 15 years ago. I went to the emergency room a couple of times. I thought I was having a heart attack 24/7. And it was because, you know, I wasn't living congruently with my goals. My actions were misaligned with my values. And I was hypocritical in some of the activities I was engaging in. I was a personal trainer and I was binge drinking on the weekend. And so I felt a lot of guilt around that. This also kept a lot of my thoughts inside, very, you know, I had introverted tendencies, is like what I like to say, and I didn't have an outlet for them. And so if you combine all those things, you can get into quite an anxious and panic state, which is one of the many reasons that we're seeing just a massive increase in anxiety at all ages. And it's really sad to see it, especially in the younger ages. But that was the catalyst that made me, you know, kind of sit up straight and go, listen, you gotta change. And so, I mean, man, I went through and I turned over every rock. I mean, I tried everything, you know, Qigong, Tai Chi, yoga, the classic yoga and breath work and meditation. And I didn't like most of them. It took me a long time to learn to like meditation. In fact, I didn't actually make meditation a regular habit until years later. But I knew that there was no way I could continue on. And it's kind of like when you're in that rock bottom situation, hopefully you've never been in that rock bottom situation. Like you just get to the point where it's like, I'll do anything. And that was the path that kind of set me down getting my life straight again.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. And, you know, I know a lot of us have been in that position, but very few of us have kind of taken the steps that you have to not only pinpoint like, hey, like this anxiety is actually blocking me, preventing me from executing and living the life that they want, but also then to overcome it and then share your message out there with, you know, millions of people.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, I'm not embarrassed by it at all. And I don't think anybody should be. But I do, I also have the kind of this weird mentality, I guess you could say, once you're past anxiety, it's like you kind of get cocky with it, but I truly believe I'll never have anxiety again. But I also believe that, you know, most people suffer from anxiety attacks, but the way to actually get through your anxiety attacks is to attack the anxiety. And it's kind of like if you watch any sport, if you're a fan of any team sport, football, basketball, you know, you always see like this team that's up by maybe like 20 points in the fourth quarter of a basketball game, or a couple of touchdowns in the fourth quarter of a football game, and they start playing defense, and then they lose that game. The team that wins continues to play offense, and it's kind of that same mentality we take. You know, most people, they kind of dance around anxiety, and they're like really gentle around it, but you really do need to be aggressive against the anxiety in trying all these things, you know, learning how to breathe better, eliminating the stressors, but also having that positive attitude. And I just was making a video for my Instagram about this. It was something that really helped me through my anxiety was, when you have anxiety, one of the best things to do is to actually go out and help another person. It's almost impossible to feel anxious when you are helping somebody out. It sounds kind of counterintuitive. It sounds like, you know, most people would not even think of it. But, you know, I had anxiety so many different days, and I tried so many different ways to overcome it, that was one of the things that was consistently always working. You just have to go out and help other people. And when, because I think anxiety is a lot of brought on ourselves. And I don't touch depression because I think that is much more serious condition, you know, much more medically invoked. And I think a bunch of exercises, mental exercise, are not going to help depression. It is much more serious. But anxiety, I truly believe it's all on us to fix. And so going out and giving generously to other people makes it tough for you to be anxious.
Yeah. So totally agree. And that's something that I picked up from your books, you know, like not only just on like giving and being in a state of helping other people, but also like misalignment. And I've struggled with anxiety for a while, especially in the start of my career. You know, I had my back against the wall, and a lot of times upbringing and certain things from the past can get in the way of executing. I always kind of figured out a way to get to a certain level, but to get to the next level, there's all these things that we have to overcome, and your book helps us.
Yeah. And, you know, with every level in life, you never get to this point where you're kind of just on cruise control and you're living you're on easy street, as the old saying used to be. You take a look at whatever you think of Elon Musk, like that guy has tremendous pressure on it. And, you know, just because he's got a lot of money, I mean, he's probably got anxiety. I just read Mark Zuckerberg has lost $100 billion of his net worth. It's the greatest net worth loss in the entire history of civilization. And so it doesn't matter. Well, he's still got 40 billion, or I don't know how much he still has. But you know, all of us who don't have even a billion to think, well, man, can't the guy just be happy with 10 billion? But still, everything is a personal competition. And so whether you're getting to the next level of singing and songwriting, whether you're getting to the next level of bodybuilding, whether you're getting to the next level of money, nobody likes things taken away, and that kind of stuff can cause anxiety. And so again, we're looking at like 50 million Americans, one out of six people, 18% of Americans are likely struggling with anxiety, because it was 40 million before COVID. And since COVID, it's exploded. Now, it's exploded for a couple of reasons. One, people see people like me talking about it, and I was encouraged to talk about it by other people. So, you know, maybe 20 years ago, there was a whole lot more anxiety, and everybody kind of just, you know, shoved it in the closet. But now we're a little bit more open about it. But being open about it helps people through it. But everybody listening, whether you've got it on a scale of, I get anxious when I'm sitting in the car in traffic, and you know, like that's a 1 out of 10, or it's like, you know, I can't leave the house today because I have anxiety, or I feel like going to the emergency room or the doctor, you know, a 10 out of 10, trust me, almost all of us have been there, but there is a way through.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. And I know for you, there was a turning point for you where you were actually repeatedly going to like the hospital and kind of checking, and you had that self-awareness to kind of say, this is a pain point. I need identified in order to get through this.
Yeah. So 2006. So I mean, like I'm a much older individual than probably most people listening to this call and to the show. So 2006, self-induced anxiety attack. It was New Year's Day. So New Year's Eve, I went out and I got drunk again, and I was exhausted from all the holiday parties up until then. I should have stayed home and went to bed at 6 o'clock at night. Instead, I stayed out till about 4 o'clock in the morning. And then the next morning when I got up, I got in the shower, and all of a sudden my heart started jackhammering, and I just paced through my apartment, my tiny little condo in Toronto, all day long. Finally gave up and went to the emergency room, walked in and said I was having a heart attack. And they take you right to the back real fast when you say you're having a heart attack. I left there about an hour later feeling pretty good. And actually, one thing that's very important to know, because it's similar to what I talked about before, you got to get out of your head. As soon as I walked out of my condo into the cold. It was a very cold night in Toronto. I felt 10 to 20% better. And as soon as I got in a cab with a stranger and started talking to the cab driver, even just telling him the directions to the hospital, I felt another 20% better. So that's me getting out of my own head. That's me talking to somebody. Look at the power of, and I wasn't even doing it purposefully. So imagine I was talking to somebody who understood. Imagine I was talking to a friend that cared. It would just take the weight of the world off your shoulders. So make sure you're doing those things. And that was the first time. And then so that week I started all this yoga and stuff. And then, like I said, I got cocky. And about 6 weeks later, I kind of fell back into old habits. And then 6 weeks after that, another bender weekend, you know, drank way too much and had too much caffeine the next day to try and be awake. And then that's when I had another anxiety attack that one lasted for 6 weeks. So if you can imagine Wow. tingling from the top of your head down to the end of your fingertips, elevated heart rate, your tight chest, you can't really breathe. I could sleep from about 11 p.m. till 3 a.m. and the anxiety would get me up again. And this is no exaggeration, 42 straight days of this until I finally, and I was a personal trainer at the time, and you know, there'd be slightly better days where I would, you know, be able to train a few people at the gym and do a kind of half-hearted workout. But then Monday in May of 2006, I can't remember, it was like mid-May, and I was training a 5'3", 310-pound, obese, overworked, stressed out lawyer. And I said to him, you got to take me to the emergency room. And if either of us needed to go to the emergency room, it was this guy. But here I was asking him, he looked at me like I had two heads because I looked totally fine. In fact, at the time I was like 190 pounds, 9% body fat. I was in the best shape of my life. I had the most money I ever had in my life. I had everything going for me, but the anxiety don't care. And so I had to go to the emergency room. That day they didn't care so much because they were very busy. So even though I said I was having a heart attack, they said, go wait in the corner. Sat there for about 4 hours and then finally got this chest x-ray and they gave me a heart rate monitor. So this was the game changer. They gave me a heart rate monitor and they said, come back in 24 hours, drop it off. And then when I dropped it off, they said, we'll call you in 24 hours if there's anything that we're worried about. If not, peace out. And so I just, you know, I just sat and I watched the clock and, you know, come 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which is when I dropped it off, nothing. And then same day, same hour, I buy this book called Panic Away on the internet, this ebook, you know, and I get to the second chapter and the first 5 words in the second chapter cured me. And it said, there is nothing wrong with you. And then I was like, you know what? There is nothing wrong with me. I know there's nothing physically wrong with me. And I've got all these tools in my toolbox. And then for the next couple of years, it would come on every 3 months or so. Could be the weirdest thing. I remember going to my chiropractor and we had a conversation about how, again, I was living in Canada, how in another province in Canada, somebody who was a chiropractor, like, you know, injured a patient. And I didn't get injured at all in my chiropractic visit. But it just got in my head all weekend and it was just, I got on this loop and I didn't like vent it out. And so I could feel the anxiety coming on, but then I dipped into my toolbox of the yoga, meditation, Qigong, breathing, journaling, all these things. And I got rid of it again, but that would happen. You know, at first it was every 3 months, then every 6 months. And then I think by about 2009, 3 years after the first time I had the attacks, it was gone and has been gone ever since. And, you know, I could shotgun a Red Bull and then follow it with a Monster Energy and, you know, get a whole bunch of bad news and I still wouldn't have an anxiety attack today.
Jeez. So it's completely gone for you now.
It is.
Wow.
It is. A lot of it is, I believe, is perspective. And so I'm a big believer in reading history, and I'm also, I like Stoic philosophy. So if, you know, if people are familiar with Ryan Holiday's books, he's a big proponent of it. Tim Ferriss talks about Stoic philosophy. And so Stoic philosophy is like, kind of like, you know, you just look at reality and you're an optimist in the long run, you're dealing with reality in the short term and you're like, hey, things are bad, but they're going to get better. That sort of approach. And, you know, control what you can. So in the Perfect Day Formula, my first book, I say, control what you can, cope with what you can't control, and concentrate on what counts. And to me, that's kind of like Epictetus, one of the Stoic philosophers' philosophy in a nutshell. Because people get anxiety when they're like, you know, if their boss is angry, Well, you can't control that your boss is angry. If they're not angry at you, you know, if they're angry at something else, your traffic or, you know, the Phillies and the world, you know, are going to might lose the World Series or win the World Series. You can't control that stuff, right? And you can't control how other people in another state are going to vote, and you can't control this, that, that thing. But people get so wound up by it. So you got to understand what you can control, and that is your response to everything. And so my perspective with Stoicism, but also with history, in terms of history, like we live in one of the greatest periods of history. Like think about all the things that you can do that you couldn't do even 20 years ago, that you couldn't afford 40 years ago, that your parents couldn't afford, that kings didn't have 150, 200 years ago. Like we have everything that we want. And that might be the problem. When you no longer have problems, you invent problems is what a lot of people's problems are. And so just having that perspective that people have lived through worse and persevered through it. And I kind of owe it. It's my, you know, I'm a big fan of reading World War II history. I'm not a big fan of World War II, but I'm a big fan of World War II history. And I just like, I think it would be dishonorable to the people that died in that war to go out and be like kind of a mopey person and not do my best and think that the world is so, this is the, you know, the worst time in the world when it's clearly not. And so those are just some of the perspectives that help me through things on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I love what you said there too. You know, even for example, just the tools we have today that we didn't have in the past and we can take them for granted. You know, even like having somebody like you on this podcast, which like 10, 15 years ago, it'd be impossible. You maybe knew one or two people like you out of all of our network, and now we can just go look you up on YouTube and get access to like crazy badass stuff, right?
It's unbelievable. I mean, you can contact people with a million followers. You can contact relatively famous people on Instagram. You know, everybody's kind of relatively famous these days, but you can get them to personally reply to you. It's insane. And like otherwise, like 30 years ago, we might have had email, but you know, 40, 50 years ago, you and I would be writing letters back and forth in the mail. Listen, I'm so old that when I was 24, I was finishing a master's degree in exercise physiology. And my ultimate goal when I was in high school and college was to actually be a strength and conditioning coach in the National Hockey League. I'm from Canada, that we play hockey, right? And so I literally sent a letter in the mail to every single one of the GMs whose address I could find. And I actually got written replies back from about six of them, including the Toronto Maple Leafs. The guy who was the GM in the Toronto Maple Leafs wrote me like a nice letter. Like this guy, why would he take all the time? But anyways, you know, that was back then. Today, I could send out 24,000 emails in a day to the GMs of every sports team in the entire world in a single day and send them messages and all these other things. So yeah, we are living in a miraculous time. And I just hope that people are, you know, so I'm being grateful for it. And it's difficult to have anxiety when you have gratitude.
That is a real one. Yeah. You know, I've noticed that. And it's also helped me with a lot of the materials in your book of not constantly being focused on myself. Like, for example, public speaking or getting on a podcast. I feel like the more I focus on myself and how I'm delivering, the worse I do. If I think about the audience, then the better I do because I'm just kind of free flowing it.
Yeah. It's actually, I had talking to my wife about this last night. We go to and do some self-defense together. So it's private instructor, and she and I both go. And he makes us do some warm-up with hips and, you know, these elbows across the body at first. And I told her, like he says, you know, stand in front of the mirror, watch your technique. And I told my wife, I close my eyes when I do it because I do it better when my eyes are closed and I get into this rhythm. And it's almost like a dance, right? When you're moving your body and generating power from your core and your hips. And she looked at me funny, but I said, I just overthink it when I'm looking in the mirror, which is similar to what you just described. And then one other thing with that aspect, it's so much better when you're like, if you're on a podcast and you're like, I'm just talking to that one person. Tim Ferriss, who wrote his book, The 4-Hour Workweek, he either said in the book or he said in interviews about the book that he struggled to write the book at first until he decided to write the book as a letter to one of his friends.
Ooh.
And when he wrote the book as a letter, you know, it flowed, it became much more conversational, and obviously it went on to be like one of the best-selling books of this century, I would imagine. So, especially in the nonfiction world. So the other day, this guy hired for some Instagram and TikTok auditing and suggestions on my content, he said, you know, make sure that you are just speaking to one person in your videos. Right now, it feels like you're kind of talking to a room full of people. You just speak to one person and it'll come across better. So it's something I knew, but it's something I need to be reminded of on a regular basis too.
Yeah. Yeah. I just literally, I'm going to actually implement that. That's something I'm going to definitely put in my toolkit and think about. And I feel like a lot of your stuff, like a lot of your content online is not only just about like, you know, the physical mental state, but it's also about, you know, the best practices and not running in the hamster wheel of doing things that don't matter. I know one of your quotes is action beats anxiety, motion beats meditation, work beats worry. And for a lot of us, a lot of us take the action because I think the people who are going to naturally gravitate towards you are people who are looking to get better, looking to grow their business. But we can take so much action in the wrong direction that it actually starts to make us run the wrong way.
Yeah, absolutely. And for, you know, one of the reasons that people do a lot of things is you do get a biological reward, a dopamine hit when you complete a task. And I've written 3 books and I know how difficult it is to write books because there's so many other things that you could be doing because it's important, but it's not necessarily urgent unless, you know, somebody's given you a check and said, hey, have this book to us by March 30th. Okay, then it's urgent. You've got a deadline. But for most of us, we're doing it on our own timeline. And this goes for almost any project that you're doing. And so it's the most important thing on your list. But you know, we all think, well, I'll just go and do this right now. It's only going to take me 5 minutes. And then you get a hit of dopamine from doing that thing. Then you're like, well, this other thing will take me 20 minutes. And you do that. And the next thing you know, now you've lost the discipline, willpower, and intention that you started the day with. And it's like you just say, I'm going to put this off until tomorrow. And then it's tomorrow. And then it's tomorrow. And then it's next year. And then and so on and so forth. And we go through life never having accomplishing the big things because we did all the little things. And it was death by 1,000 cuts to our big goals and dreams that we were, I call it perverse form of procrastination. Like you can do a lot of good things. You can do meditation. You can do yoga. You can do YouTube videos of motivation. You can do a workout. You can drink a green juice. And you can, listen, those are all good things. But if they all got in the way of you taking action of fixing your relationship or finding a way to quit drinking or whatever it is, those things didn't really matter. They were just actual forms of procrastination of you working on the hardest thing. And that's where the, you know, we take a look at the people we look up to as successful, whether they're authors, whether they're songwriters, whether they're professional athletes, like, you know, Michael Phelps, I'm just choosing him as a random example, spent 8 to 10 hours in the pool every day. Well, I'm sure he could have found something else to do. And I'm sure he was tempted to not go to the pool every day. And everybody wants, you know, 24 gold medals, but no one's willing to put 8 to 10 hours in the pool except for Michael Phelps. And so if you want to be successful, you have to do difficult things. And so I get a lot of flack for that. Action beats anxiety, motion beats meditation, work beats worry. Quote, you know, it does sound good. But I do meditation, but I just need people to understand that if you have a problem sitting on the couch and thinking about it, meditating about it, worrying about it, getting anxious about it, ain't going to solve the problem. The only thing that's going to solve the problem is going and solving the problem.
That is so real. That is so real. And I know for me, the times that I have piled up things inside and I don't get to them and I think about it, I may meditate, I may try to run away from it. Eventually, like it's in your subconscious and I wake up in the morning and I'm thinking about it, or I'm in the gym working out and it's in the back of my head and actually my workout gets screwed up, or I get an email that I'm avoiding. So I think it definitely applies, you know, it applies to all of us.
I had a bad sleep last night, and I had a bad sleep last night because a friend of mine told me about something they had accomplished that I'm also looking to accomplish, but I realized that I'm underperforming towards that goal. And so I didn't sleep very well because I realized that I'm not envious of my friend. I'm disappointed in myself, and I'm disappointed in myself. And I will give myself credit. I've done a lot of action in the right direction on this, and I am going in the right direction. We're getting towards that goal that I share with my friend. But I could probably move faster. I could probably do better. And because I hadn't moved faster and done better, my brain was just like, hey, man, you're disappointing yourself. And that's when I feel the worst, is when I know what I'm capable of and I look at what I've done and they don't match up. And that's very similar to when you have goals in your life and your actions take you in the other direction. You know, you want to lose 30 pounds? Great. Show me what you eat. Wow, that's not going in the right direction. And that's what causes a lot of frustration and anxiety in people, is because they know they could do better. And so it's up to us, once we know the better to do, is to do the better. And when you do that, even if, you know, it doesn't make you rich or whatever, you're going to feel pretty good about yourself. And that's where, you know, everybody knows these people who don't really have a lot of material stuff in their life, but they're just darn happy. And it's because they're doing a darn good job of living according to their values.
Ooh, yeah, yeah. You know, like one of your quotes, and when it said in your books, like, misalignment often starts with comparison syndrome, and also misalignment between your values, right? And a lot of us are doing things that we see on the news, we see in the media, that's hot at the time, but maybe it doesn't fill our cup, you know?
Yeah. And another little phrase we have in that, in the Perfect Week formula, is your values and vision must drive every decision. So your values, what really matters to you, because there's what matters to other people and, you know, what is cool in society or what's hot right now. But if you really deep dive into what mattered to you, based on your upbringing, based on your goals, based on what you really truly want, those are your values. And then your vision is the movie script for your life. What do you want your life to look like in the next couple of years? And you should know this. You should be as specific as possible about what you want your life to look like, where you want to live, who you want to be with, what you want your days to look like, you know, who you want to be around, what you want to be doing. And when you have those two things, your values and your vision, that gives you a straight line to success. Okay, great. My vision, this is where I want to be. This is a clear path to getting there, you know, plus or minus a few things. And then everything else is a detour. And I use this example because I think people can understand this one, is imagine you know a guy who's 30 years old and he's been dating an amazing woman for 2 years and he's got a good job or he's got a good business, and he knows that his vision, his straight line to success, takes him to a life with this woman. They're married, they have kids, they're living in this part of town, close to her family, close to his family, safe neighborhood. You know, it's going to be great for the kids. They're going to get a house with a backyard and all this stuff. Great. Straight line of success. Super clear. We all know where this guy's going. We all know he drives a Jeep, right? You know, you can picture this guy, right? And then one of his buddies comes along and says, hey, bro, we're going to Vegas with, you know, Johnny Rotten, who's like the worst friend of your group that you left behind 3 years ago, and we're going for his bachelor party, or we're going for some bachelor party, and this guy's coming along. That's a detour. And that's where you have to say no to that trip, because listen, that trip is a short burst of fun and whatever, but it can destroy everything on that straight line of success. It can destroy everything. One stupid decision. You maybe get in a fight and you get really hurt bad. You pick with the wrong person. You know, and one of your friends has some drugs and then you get arrested for drugs, or you're drinking and driving. Like, just one bad decision from that one trip destroys everything. And that's an extreme example, but it goes with every goal that you have in life. There is a clear straight line to success, and everything that does not move you forward on that is a detour. And the fewer detours you take in life, the more you're going to achieve the things you want, the more that you achieve the things that you want that are aligned with your values and your vision, the less of that external stress you're going to have on you. So, I mean, listen, you're listening to a guy who has made all those mistakes. And, you know, if I could go back and not make those mistakes, I would choose to not make any of them. It wasn't worth it to make the mistakes that I made. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I got a funny story when I'm 55. I don't want a funny story when I'm 55. And I just realized that, like, there's no value in it. What I really want is what I was fortunate to end up with now, you know, an amazing wife and little baby girl and in a good business and being able to speak with people like you. Like, if I would not have screwed around and went on so many detours, man, I'd be having way more great conversations. I'd know way more people. My books would have sold twice as much because I probably would have gotten them out faster and so on and all this stuff. So just understand that when you're on the straight line to success, don't take the detour.
That's super powerful. And, you know, it kind of makes me think about just the detours not only I've made, but we all kind of make in life when we're battling and, you know, we think we deserve the trip, or we like not necessarily going on the trip, but we go on the wrong type of trip, right? That with the wrong types of people. And I'm just curious for you, man, because you were saying like, you know, you've reached a very high level in your life. And not only just for you, like, because we were talking about being in a state of giving and like you're giving back a lot through your business. I mean, you've coached over 250 people from zero to a million or more in their business and in their lives, right? In their net worth. What's motivating you now?
I think that with all high performers, you're never really fully satisfied, you know? So, I mean, if you look at Kobe Bryant, you know, rest in peace, my man. I wasn't a huge basketball fan, but look what he did after basketball. He accomplished more in the few years after basketball than most people in the entertainment industry do in their entire career. Like, he, you know, he had a cartoon, he had a bunch of other stuff going on. You know, he's building a business. And, you know, similar to him, one of the greatest business speakers I've ever heard was Magic Johnson. I mean, he was funny, he had great stories, he showed how he, you know, I was actually a Starbucks licensee for a while, and his Starbucks in inner cities were doing better than Starbucks in the suburbs. And it was amazing. And, you know, here's a guy who won all these championships, and he could have just shut it down and been like, you know, I'm just going to retire and live easy. But no, I mean, he was just driven, right? He's just driven to the next level. And then there's a guy named Ed Mylett. And have you ever read Ed's books or seen any of his podcasts?
I listen to his stuff too.
Yeah, great guy. And Ed has this little shtick that I really like. And he said, you know, Ed's a man of very strong faith. And so Ed says, when he dies, he believes that God will introduce him to the best Ed Mylett that he could have been. So, you know, it's like on a scale of 1 to 100, current Ed Mylett's maybe at an 83, but he could be 100 out of 100. And he's going to meet that person, that Ed Mylett, and seeing what he could have been. And getting to that level of what he could have been is what drives Ed to go and continue. You know, he released another book, you know, this year or last year, and, you know, to go to the next level. And so when you are that type of person and you surround yourself with those types of people, you just don't get complacent, because all of us, I'm sure Ed even probably thinks there from time to time, it's like, yeah, you know, I've done okay, but I haven't really done that much. And I certainly feel that way. Like, I'm very proud of the books I've written, but yeah, I've got 200,000 followers on Instagram. I should have 2 million. You know, I got a long way to go. And so I think that, and it's not for ego, but it's like, I don't play golf. This is my golf. You know, being successful in business and helping people, this is, you know, I can keep score and improve on it. So that's what drives me. And it's very similar to Ed's story about, you know, I just want to be the best version of myself.
That's badass, bro. I mean, it's badass. It's super inspiring.
I will say this, though, that if you are that type of person, but you don't spend enough time with other people who think that way, and it's easier than ever, you know, again, so, you know, how easy our life is, you know, 40 years ago, if you were a high-performing person in a small town in Kansas, and you only hung around your high school friends who were good people, but, you know, they were just like, hey, I'm 9 to 5 or 7 to 3 at the factory, and then I'm done. You know, you're going to be brought down into a complacency. So if you are a ambitious high performer, and this happens to me every once in a while, I find myself, oh, I got to get out of here, and I got to go and either get on more podcasts or have, you know, higher level people on my podcast, or, you know, I got to go to events. I got to put myself in a position where I'm uncomfortable in big crowds, but I got to go and do it because I'm getting into complacency. So if you are ambitious, make sure that you spend time with other ambitious people. And if you've ever heard the phrase, you know, never be the smartest person in the room, well, never be the most ambitious person in the room. Make sure you're in a room of morally and ethically ambitious people. But as long as you're in the room with good people, make sure you're not the most ambitious person in the room, because that will force you to play up a level in life. And that's going to make all the difference.
Jeez, that really sticks out to me. Yeah, that sticks out to me a lot. because I think you're right. You know, when you're around your crew or you're around friends and different people, you may tell them like you have an idea or you're going to be working whatever, 10 to 15 hours a day, or you're going to be waking up early and doing what's in your books. And like then the 15 minutes of just kind of the super focused work and people think you're crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And the way that I realized this was when I was younger, my best sport was soccer. And I remember when we were the under 14 team for our town, we were under 12 and we played the under 14 team and we played the best game of our lives, right? Because playing the older, more successful, stronger team made us play up a level in life. And, you know, if anybody loves an underdog in sports, that's it. That's it right there. The underdog, you know, sometimes the underdog gets blown out by, you know, 50 points in college football or 100 points in college basketball. But sometimes the underdog plays the game of their life because they're around people that make them play up that level. And that's what you want every single day. And, well, not every single day, but you want it on a very regular basis. And you don't want to be in a position where you're playing teams that you can beat, you know, or, you know, use a metaphor, you're around people whose ambitions you can beat by 50 points every day because you will eventually have somebody beat you.
Ooh, I like that. I like that's good. That's really good. Damn. No, it is. It's good. It's, you know, it's something that I think a lot of people do like unconsciously. Just you try to level up, you try to connect with different people in different industries. But when you do it intentionally, it's a whole nother game. So for you, like for entrepreneurs that you coach, right? Because you're coaching, you know, people at a number of different levels. I'm sure, you know, people who are just kind of starting off, people at a very high level of their game. You know, what are some of the traits and characteristics of people who perform at that highest level, if there is any?
Yeah, in most cases, they, you know, classic cliches, they are the most persistent person you'll ever meet. You know, you put one obstacle in front of them, doesn't matter how long it's going to take, they're going to overcome that obstacle. And they're going to go on to the next thing. They don't have to be the smartest person in the room. They just have to be the type of person who gets instructions from their mentor, from a book, from whatever, goes out and does the thing, and comes back and asks for the next thing. And that's really success in a nutshell, whether it's, you know, your kid learning how to do their shoelaces, or whether it's you learning how to do a math problem, or whether it's you learning how to write sales copy or do a sales call, or, you know, grow a podcast. It's here's what you're supposed to do. Okay, I'm going to go and do it. And people who procrastinate, never do the thing, but other people who overthink it or try to outsmart it and say, I've got a better way to do it, usually don't get as far ahead as the person who just takes the information and applies it, because, you know, almost nothing has not been done before. And so there's somebody who's, you know, there's people who've climbed Mount Everest. If you want to climb Mount Everest, you don't go and invent a new way to the top of Mount Everest. You do what all the other successful people have done to get to the top of Mount Everest. You do the same training, you follow the same plan, you get the same Sherpas, you pack the same equipment. That's what you do. It's not rocket surgery. It's difficult as heck, but it's not rocket surgery. And so it's the same with most things in life. The common ingredient is that when you're climbing Mount Everest, or whether you're starting a business, or whether you're trying to become a professional athlete or professional singer, you're going to come up against physical obstacles. You're going to come up with mental obstacles. You're going to come up with obstacles that are external, that are forced on you by people. You're going to come up against politics. You're going to come against all those obstacles and rule changes and laws and all this sort of thing. And the people who are still successful in 5 or 10 years are the people who just didn't quit when a lot of other people did. And so, like, for example, I had my first business seminar in 2007, and I have seen people come and go, and I have seen people consistently successful for 15 years because they are going to be successful come heck or high water. There's nothing that's going to stop them. I remember this. I had this client. Her name's Isabel Price, and she has a very successful nutrition coaching program. And when she came to me, she was living in Jersey. She was a nutritionist. She was not yet married, but she didn't have any money. But when I got on the call with her to sell her into my program, I remember thinking, there's nothing going to stop this woman. And so she got her husband, or her fiance at the time, to put the money down on his credit card to get her into the program. And she was a millionaire a year later. And it was not because of, you know, I taught her this secret thing. You know, I taught her the basics and the foundation, showed her what to do, introduced her to a few people, and her hard work got her to the $1 million. But I knew it from that call. And she's still going.
Was it her energy?
It was her faith in herself. It was her conviction. So I you know, you could describe it as energy, right? But for some people think energy is Tony Robbins. And she had energy. She was a energetic, I wouldn't say she was bubbly, but she was an energetic, convicted woman. She had conviction, and she was driven by a personal story. You know, her mom passed away from type 2 diabetes at too young of an age, and that just drove her to like be on this mission that, my gosh, there's so many other women out there who I have to save. And when you got that behind you, and she's also a woman of strong faith, and you know, she believed this was her path. And so when you have those things combined, it's hard to stop a person like that. Now, she has had tons of struggles. You know, back one of her first business struggles was, you know, again, it's probably dating me again a bit here, but in 2009, everybody in the fitness industry could run pretty bold claims on Google Ads. So, you know, when you go to Google, you type in a search and the ads come up. You used to be able to run fitness ads and nutrition ads. But in 2009, there was something called the Google Slap. And that was because of really shady supplement companies that wouldn't tell you they were going to auto bill you. And so there was these bad actors that ruined it for everybody, because Google didn't know, well, how are we going to know who's the bad guys? We'll just ban the entire industry. And so people went from making $10,000 a day to making $0 overnight. They, like, you literally woke up and all your supply of customers was gone. Now, if you were smart, you had a few other avenues, but that happened to their business. You know, they had a bunch of other avenues, but it was a huge hit. And then Facebook did the same sort of thing. It hurt me in 2013 or 14. It just stopped allowing bold claims from the fitness industry. And so we were making a ton of money on Facebook. I was spending $5,000 a day on Facebook, and I'm sure my friends were spending way more, and it got taken away almost overnight.
Wow.
So she ran up against that. And then, you know, her and her business partner, who were friends, had a falling out. They're friends still, but they had a falling out over the way their business was run. And, you know, those are just some of the things. You know, in the businesses that I've had, I've ran a couple of gyms with business partners, and we've had employees quit today, open a gym on the same street tomorrow, the next day, and took 30% of our clients, if not more. That happens all the time in the fitness industry. And of course, we've had people quit, you know, out of the blue, who were great employees, and, you know, we were not properly prepared. We didn't have redundancies in place. Like, you're going to come up against those things all the time. Now, the difference between the people who are long-term successful is that the people who, when that happens to somebody and they hit the panic button and the world is ending because one employee left, or they lost one big contract, or they got a huge refund for whatever reason, those are the not going to make it people. Because that's not even a big deal. Like, that's going to happen all the time. It happens in every business, in every industry. You're going to get a lawsuit. You just are going to get a lawsuit if you're an American business. You don't deserve it in most cases, but you're going to get it. And so when the people who get one hit the panic button, then it's like, okay, you know, they might get through this, but they'll probably be too scarred to keep on going. Whereas the people who are like, okay, what do you got tomorrow? You know, what are you going to throw at me tomorrow? And they're the type of people who are just, they're going to show up every single day. And no matter how difficult the things are, you're going to still be, no matter how difficult it is, like, even back to Elon Musk, right? No matter how difficult everything going on is, he still has to show up at a level higher than everybody that works for him every single day, because he's the leader of those companies. And he's got a lot of stress and a lot of people against him, but that's just what you have to do. That's the cross you have to bear. And so the people who understand and accept that is the cross I have to bear. Great. If I have to work until 11 o'clock tonight because our website went down and I have to figure out, like, I had a friend who built a $100 million supplement company, and he has stayed awake for more 3-day periods than everybody else I know combined. And it's not right. You know, it's not like, hey, man, you got to go and stay awake for 3-day periods. No, like he had an email list of 5 million people. 5 million people, right? Like he could fill football stadiums nearly 40 times. Like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers football stadium, 40 of those, like that thing filled 40 times was his email list. But then one day, Yahoo stopped delivering emails. So there was a problem. There was something in his emails that sent all of his Yahoo emails to spam. And his revenue took a huge hit because a lot of his subscribers were older people with Yahoo emails. He spent the next 3 days going through all the terms of service, figuring everything out, going through all the rules until he finally figured it out what it was. Because nobody else in the business was going to work that hard to do it. But he knew that was his cross to bear. And that is the separation between someone who's making $100 million and someone who, you know, flames out at a few hundred thousand. Now, I'll be honest, I ain't staying up for 3 days figuring that out. It might take me 3 weeks and I will figure it out, but I'm not as committed as my friend is. And that's why he's worth, you know, he built a $100 million business and I built one about a tenth the size, right? So, you know, there's different levels to different levels.
Yeah. You know, I'm curious if that can be taught, right? Like, let's just say somebody who's like not motivated, not inspired, or maybe just like not the kind of person I'm going to press through this obstacle no matter what. Can that be taught?
I don't know if taught is the right word. I think that a lot of people have something that can summon that level of conviction. So for some people, they'll never do that for business. But if they were in the, like that, you ever watch that movie where that guy like saws his arm off 28 hours or whatever? I don't know if I could do that. I mean, I don't know. But I've never been summoned by my situation to have to consider that. There's a lot of people who would not have done that, right? There's a lot of people who would have, you know, fought valiantly and died. There would a lot of people who've been and quit. Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning is another great example. Here's a psychology doctor, professor, and he was summoned to 4 years in a concentration camp, and he was summoned to survive that because of his attitude and then go on and write the book that I think should be mandatory reading for every person in the history of the universe. That's another book that has served me well on the perspective side, because like if this guy can do that, then I can, you know, be, you know, my greatest stress in life is when the power goes out for 3 hours and it's like, man, I don't have the internet for an hour and a half. What am I going to do? Right. How am I going to survive? But this is a man, you know, Viktor Frankl survived a concentration camp for 4 years. And have you ever read that book?
I haven't, but it seems like a badass story. I'm definitely going to pick it up after.
It's incredible. And the craziest part, I didn't realize, I read this book multiple times 10 years ago. I learned like 2 or 3 years ago that he didn't have to go to the concentration camp. So Viktor Frankl was a Jewish person living in Poland, and he was actually safe in Switzerland, but his parents were still in Poland or Germany. And if he went back to help them, he would go to a concentration camp, and he knew that. He didn't have to go back. He could have stayed safe in Switzerland, but he felt a duty to his parents. They all went to a concentration camp, and his parents died, and his wife died. His wife died in the concentration camp because they went back.
Wow.
But he risked that to go back. But that situation summoned the strength and courage in him to survive, because he would say that in most cases, people would just give up. They would get to a point where they no longer believed that they were going to survive. And he never gave up hope. And that's what kept him going. And there's a guy named James Stockdale. There's something called the Stockdale Paradox, which is Stockdale spent 7 years, I believe, in a Vietnam prisoner of war camp. And what Stockdale found was similar to what Viktor Frankl found, which was the people who thought they would be out by Christmas. So, you know, someone becomes a prisoner of war in Vietnam, And they think, oh, you know, in 3 months, Christmas is coming. You know, they're going to let a few people out for Christmas. And I just need to get to Christmas and then I'll be fine. The people who thought that, then they didn't get out at Christmas time and they died shortly after. They gave up. The Stockdale paradox is stoicism, essentially, because it is confront the brutal facts of your current reality. So confront the brutal facts of your current reality. Like right now, you know, America's in a recession, or, you know, somebody's lost their job, or, you know, their stock portfolio's going down, or their crypto's all gone, or whatever. Okay, so you've confronted the brutal reality, but you must have unwavering faith that you will prevail in the end. So it's understanding and accepting how horrible things are right now. You know, a guy who's in the war got his leg cut off, right? It's horrible. But in 3 years from now, you'll be walking on a prosthetic leg and you've got to, you know, you must have this unwavering faith that I'm going to survive. I'm going to be okay in the long run. I knew this guy, Jason Redman, who was, I believe he was a Navy SEAL, and he got ambushed in Afghanistan or Iraq, and he got his face shot off and all this sort of stuff. And he's written a book about it. And, you know, he could have died. He could have just let himself die, but he fought through it with the unwavering faith that everything will be good in the end. And, you know, if you look hard at him, you can see, like, yeah, there's something odd about the right side of your face. And if you see his arm, his bicep's gone. But otherwise, he looks like a totally normal guy walking into the room. But if you, you know, of course, when he was shot and all beat up, he wouldn't have looked like that. And so he accepted the brutal reality of the situation, but he never gave up the unwavering faith that things are going to get better. So that is essentially entrepreneurship in a nutshell, that no matter how bad things are right now, that you know what works and you know what are the right principles, and you're going to show up and you're going to do all the things, the right things, and you're going to treat your customers well, and you're going to, you know, your one advertising thing got shut down, you're going to come back to more, you're going to find another advertising platform because you've created something, whether it's a pillow or whether it's a nutrition program or whether it's an electric vehicle or whatever it is. You've got something so important that other people need to have it, and you're going to come back, and no matter how much the world kicks you around, you are going to show up again the next day. And that's essentially entrepreneurship.
Yeah, you know, it is. You know, like, so I'm in Silicon Valley now, and we see so many startups go under, and I've been a part of startups that have gone under like numerous times. And you're right. It's just like that mindset of like, you don't give up, you focus on the things you can control. And there's the analogy you just used. It's just so perfect into like how life can throw these curveballs at us. And then we focus on everything that we can't control. And then we start to give up. Then we start to get down. Then we lose the motivation. And then we stop spending the money. We stop doing the right things we need to do to grow. And having somebody like you that can remind us and kind of push us in that direction is, it's almost like, I feel like it's one of the most important things.
Most of us entrepreneurs, startup people, you know, we're kind of like one out of our 150 person network. There's not a lot of us that we talk to on a regular basis. And so you need to keep the right voices in your head, whether they're, you know, people that you connect with in person once a month, even, or whether you're consuming this content, Ed Milet's content, Tom Bilyeu, you know, people like that, men and women, of course. And you need that in your head so that when you're having a rough one, you got somebody behind you.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, you know, we're honored to have now access to people like you and your content and your message, your books, which lay out the foundation for entrepreneurs. And, you know, no matter what your goal is, if you're not necessarily thinking about building a company, maybe you're trying to get promoted at your company, maybe it's to build a healthy family. Like, I think there's just a lot of these things that are in your material that not only apply to business and entrepreneurs, but also apply to family life. Because I've noticed for you, you know, you've been able to build these businesses, coach all these people, but also still like live this world of abundance. Like, you travel, you have your family on your post, like you do a lot, but you still make time for the right people in your life, like the key people.
Boundaries are the key. Boundaries and public accountability. So, you know, saying I'm going to stop work at a certain time and then telling people that you're going to stop work at a certain time, And that public accountability to friends, to your Facebook group, to your customers, to the people that read your emails or listen to your podcasts, people that you won't meet, like you're telling the world that you're going to do something and you don't want to be seen as a hypocrite. And that's a powerful motivator for you to stick to the boundaries that you share. And then the boundaries are key because if you set a boundary, you know, like there's a boundary in sports, right? You know, there's it was four quarters in basketball, and as soon as that buzzer goes, the game is over. So you got to work really hard if you're down by 20 points to get all the points you need to win the game. And it's very similar. Like, I promised the world that I'm going to be done at 4 o'clock every single day. It's 2:30 now. I have to write another 1,000 words for this white paper or whatever. I got to stay focused. I can write 2,000 words. I only need to write 1,000, but you know, sure, there's a lot of distractions here, but I promised people I would get this done, and I promised people I'd be done by 4, and I'm going to stick to my word. And so those are the things that have really helped me, because I would love to work more, but it's just not the right decision for this season of life that I'm in.
Totally. I mean, I feel like this has been like a masterclass in coaching, entrepreneurship, mindset, from finding things that summon us to take the right actions in our life. Like maybe it could be family, maybe it could be your upbringing, maybe it could be like shitty boss or whatever. But even now, to just the boundaries and alignments of our goals. I mean, our actions being misaligned from moving towards our goals, which can cause people anxiety, the meditation. I mean, this has been a masterclass.
Well, I appreciate it. It's kind of like my life story. So again, I'm probably a little bit older than most of the people that are going to listen to this. So I've lived another 10 or 15 years, and I'm coming like from the future and saying to you, just please don't make these mistakes, because I know how much they can throw you off course. And if you don't make those mistakes, my gosh, you're going to be successful.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Craig. You know, I know we're reaching time, and this has been amazing. You know, I know now that on your website, you know, you're actually offering people access to some of your books, some of your materials, certainly Formula. Where can people best connect with you? And if they're interested in coaching with you, how do they get in touch with you?
Best way to get a hold of me is on Instagram at Real Craig Ballantyne. Or you know what? Heck, just shoot me an email at craig@craigballantyne.com. And I give away all my books for free, the digital copies, the ebooks, and the audiobooks. And you can get that at craigballantyne.com/freebooks.
Awesome.